Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for tuning into the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder, author of Getting Better When You Can't. This is a podcast that's designed to help you see beyond everything. I believe you'll find the content interesting, engaging, and even life-changing. Please check out my website at www.kevinwinder.com and be sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter entitled Winder's Windshield. Thanks so much for tuning in. And now, on to the KevCast. Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for joining the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder. Welcome back for another episode, and welcome to Sunday. So glad you're with me, and I'm so glad that you're telling your friends and families about this podcast. I'm glad the content is challenging you and encouraging you and making you think. That's what the whole point is. So keep those comments coming and tell all your friends and family about me. Today, we are going to do a little bit of a Bible study. Now, don't tune out if that seems like it's going to be boring to you. Of course, you know if you follow this podcast that I go both wide and narrow, which means sometimes I use very little Bible, sometimes I use a lot of Bible, sometimes I talk about things that are applicable to every person, sometimes I narrow it down so that we can focus a little bit more about our spiritual reality. And today is one of those times, and I think it's really an important observation. It's something that when I studied the scripture, I never understood quite at first. It's taken me many, many, many years to kind of uncover this, and I really want to share it with you because I think it has a very broad spectrum application and not so much a narrow application as it's always taught. What the world am I talking about? Well, I am talking about a phrase that Jesus said when he had just performed a miracle. And if you're familiar with the Bible stories, he had performed a couple of miracles where he fed thousands of people. Shortly after that, they were crossing over a lake, and Jesus told his disciples in Mark 8:15, he says, "Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the leaven of Herod." And so today's topic is called Beware of the Leaven. Beware the leaven. What the heck is leaven? Well, it's yeast. It's yeast. And a little bit of leaven goes a long way, right, when you're making bread. So the point I really want to start to drive out of this is a quick observation. When Jesus told his disciples, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod, they did not understand what he meant. And likewise, many of us don't understand what this means. And most people just think of it as, don't be selfish. Don't be a hypocrite. Don't be legalistic, because that's their understanding of the Pharisee. And all of those things are in part true. But in Jesus' day, the Pharisee was the middle-class religious leader, right? These were the very, very devout in faith in the Jewish tradition. They were very conscientious about obeying the rules and the social order of the temple, and there were a lot of rules. I'll give you an example. You know, that you couldn't work on the Sabbath day, of course, but you also couldn't journey very far, which means if you walked, there was a certain distance. If you walked further than that distance, that would be considered work. And in this case, you would have to carry a mat so that you could stop and rest, and it wouldn't be considered work. But of course, if the mat was too heavy, that would be considered carrying, which would be work. So you couldn't carry a heavy mat. You see how this kind of works? These laws were everywhere, and the Pharisee was extremely conscientious of it, because the whole goal was to be live pure and be a good representative and to please God. Now, a similar comparison, maybe in Islam, are the Islamic religious police. If you're not familiar with them, they go around and they tote a very strict moral code in line. That they require all people within a certain area of the or jurisdiction of the city to obey. So if you're under Sharia law, the religious police have jurisdiction over you to tell you what you can and can't do. They focus so much. Now, and you might think of this as maybe a churchgoer. There's a lot of churchgoers who fit in this very Pharisaical kind of paradigm. They're the folks that reframe everything in the world according to the teaching of the church, the temple, the mosque. You know, they want everything to be reduced down to a biblical interpretation. And, you know, I don't fault them for that. I think in some ways, seeking the truth and trying to have a representation of the truth and following it according to your tradition is okay. But there's something that gets messed up in this process. And Jesus put it this way. He said to the Pharisees, he said, "You have a fine way of rejecting the commandment of God in order to establish your tradition." And that's in Mark 7:9. And so that's what a Pharisee is. And when Christians think of Pharisees, like I said earlier, they think that it was really a legalism problem. It's a problem of the Jews. They didn't realize that modern Christianity has completely rebuilt the temple system. Modern Christianity has reinstated moral and purity laws with benchmarks of achievement of those who are good and those who are bad. It's built a business based upon hierarchy and separatism, right? There's innies and outies, valid and invalid doctrine. There's right and there's wrong. There's those who are in, those who are out, those who are members and non-members, right? Christians think Pharisaicalism is a Jewish problem. It is not. Now, if you're coming from a perspective, and many of my audience is, more about half of you, don't really have a religious upbringing. You don't subscribe to a particular religion, right? And so you might be thinking, what is all this talk? It doesn't really apply to me because I don't really care and I don't really know anything about that and I don't live that way. Now, when we all know religious people, right? We all know people who just go through the motions, right? They talk a big talk, but they really lack any inner experience or love for others, right? You see, people who, the world's full of them, quoting the Bible, they're quoting the Torah, the Dharma, or the Quran, and yet they're full of hate. I hate those people. God hates you, right? They don't want to include people. They're exclusive, not inclusive, right? It's me versus you. Now, the world and you are probably used to calling these people hypocrites, and the word hypocrite means under a mask. But that's what the Bible calls them, and that's what the Bible calls Pharisaism, right? So it's this split between how you walk and how you talk. And this dichotomy is created by splitting every single thing into opposites, both, you know, good or bad, right or wrong, valid, invalid, hot or cold, right? You get into that kind of mindset. Now, again, if you're one of those in my audience who doesn't really seem to think you fall into this category because you've avoided religion altogether throughout your life, let me just remind you that Pharisees are religious people for sure, but they're not solely found in religion. You see, religious people are Pharisees in education. They're Pharisees in business, in the military, in the sports, in the arts, in literally every corner of our world. So if you've ever gone to lunch with a food Pharisee, then you know that this is true, right? There are people who watch the rules. They drink the corporate Kool-Aid so much that they diminish the essence of everything that the rule was set up to be for. Now, this is what the scripture is talking about when Jesus says, "Beware the leaven of Herod," right? So we had beware the leaven of the Pharisees, and now we have beware the leaven of Herod. And what is he talking about? Well, leaven is yeast, and that gives rise to bread, right? Leaven gives rise to bread, and Jesus is warning us about what gives rise to both church and state. Church and state. And if you remember, those are the two institutions that hung Jesus on the cross. But church and state are also the major institutions of control and oppression and dominance and power within our world. And you have run into both church and state throughout your whole life. You see, Pharisees in both church and state have social, economic, racial, and political power. Think about that. And all this power stands behind them. It embraces them. It's a fortress. It's immovable, unquestionable, right? It's historical. And if you align with this kind of bigger institution, it gives you a path to power. As you drink the party Kool-Aid and follow the party line, you gain influence and power and recognition by those who are higher up than you. And it gives us an identity. And what happens is we learn to pick sides. We pick teams. And our world is full of heroic stories, the Aaron Brockovich's type stories, where the one person took on the big system, the big empire, the large corporation, whatever it was. You know, now most of us are facing a system right now. Most of us are encountering some form of church and state. And my guess is that it's not all positive. Some of it may be, but not all of it is. Remember, these are the biggest powers to oppress and to imprison that we have. So do you see the leaven now? When Jesus is telling his disciples, beware the leaven, they didn't understand what he's talking about. And now do you understand? You see, it's duality. Most people say it's the hypocrisy of the Pharisees, but hypocrisy is really only a byproduct of duality. And duality is a way that you think. It's not what you think, it's how you think. It's based upon otherness. Right? It's that split where you put everything into an either or, hot, cold, one camp or another. Is it on my team or is it not? This is so prevalent and this is formative for everything you want to understand about spiritual reality. And just like yeast, it only takes a little bit of duality to take over the whole loaf. And because of that, that makes duality a real watershed feature in how a person thinks. You know, if we get it wrong at the very beginning with a little bit, everything beyond that will be wrong. You've never had an argument that didn't come from duality. Every war we've ever had came from duality. All the political arguments and the basis of all that noise and frustration and pain and suffering and oppression is all based in duality. It all comes from there. And why was Jesus using the feeding of the 5,000 to clarify that? Well, I'm going to get to that. They were confused. You see, there's one thing I'd like to say about Pharisees. And that's after this, you answer this question. What's our strategy for making our way in the world? Right? What is the strategy for how we navigate the world? I mean, you've got church and state. They're not going away. You got people playing right into their power game, and they're not going away. So is this strategy to just avoid it altogether and become some recluse and move out in the middle of a prairie and grow your own wheat? I doubt it. I don't think so. Now, is there anything good about Pharisaism? Yes. And here's what it is. If you come from chaos, then the structure and control of Pharisaism is actually a very positive step forward. Have you thought about that? I mean, think of, as children, we have to learn the rules of right and wrong, and we always learn best within a system that's binary to avoid confusion. It avoids pain. You know, you tell this child that is a danger, and that's not danger. The street is danger. The sidewalk is okay. The stove is hot. Right? Now, the military, for instance, is a great form of Pharisaism. There's a lot of rules and there's no questioning or changing the rules. You are in it or you're not. And for somebody who came from a really chaotic or inconsistent family, a military experience can be a world of healing and organization, which they never had as a child. Now, this gives a person a nice sense of purpose. It gives a person a sense of belonging, of correctness, of being on the right side. And that people like that, and I understand it. But this is why the leaven of the church and state are so compelling to a hurting and immature world. We aren't very far along. And so when we get a sense of purpose and we share a common enemy, then we feel like we have something, an identity. The system of church and state give us the identity, and that's the fallacy. We can't stay binary, right? So as we mature, we learn that the hot stove, which was dangerous for us as a toddler, it's a useful tool now as we mature. We discover that our enemy is actually our brother. The enemies that we hate the most are the ones that are just like us. You know, black and white are replaced with gray. These are all the byproduct of maturing and growing up. You can't think in black and white terms anymore. We no longer will have competitors if you're not in a black and white system. Why? Because it's not a zero-sum game. It's the zero-sum game of there's only so much to go around and I have to claw and fight and do everything I can to get mine is a very immature, backward mindset. It's saying a person who thinks that way has never actually lived and seen the beauty and expansive, generative place that the world is. And so now we understand why Jesus was reminding his disciples about the feeding of the 5,000 and the 4,000. And he reminded him of all the leftovers. And you can read about that in Mark 18 and 19. He explained that the leaven of the Pharisees and of Herod, you know, he was reminding the disciples that the miracle was not feeding the masses. And man, every sermon you've ever heard and I've ever heard always said that the miracle is the feeding of the masses. But that's not the feeding of the miracle. The miracle is the shift from binary thinking to a ternary or a three or possibility thinking. In other words, their mindset before the feeding was, well, we only have seven fish and five loaves. We can never feed these people. What will we do? It's like, we can't. It's binary. After that happened, something beyond the two options emerged, a third option, which was possibility. And now all these people were satisfied and filled, and there were leftovers beyond it. That is the miracle. It's the changing of the mind. The feeding is simply the byproduct of the latter. It's the byproduct of a mind that's now open to see possibility. Now back to the question. What is our strategy for navigating life? Will we just blindly join the rank and file of the masses and surrender our identity to church and state? You know, and I'm sorry to say that this is the default mode for most of us. Most people give so little thought to their own personal freedom that they are happy to exchange their true self for the false self that the church or state gives them. They'll take that measure of power and success and safety that comes from these big organizations, and they'll stay small and stuck within their little box instead of really moving out, becoming who they are, and bringing their unique gifts into the world. I'm sorry to say that's the reality. Most of us just blindly join the rank and file. Now, is it possible for us to be aware of the gravitational pull of institutional orthodoxy and compliance? I think we can. Now, does this mean we have to abandon them? No. You see, there is a tremendous freedom for us to work and live within these systems. We're not to abandon them, we're to live and work within them. And these systems can be very helpful, and they are necessary for our society and for the world. But we cannot be defined by the system. Don't let your power come because the system says you have it. Let the power come from a deeper, more lasting place, right? This is the place of true leadership. Because if you can be in the system and not of the system, that's what Jesus said when he said to be in the world and not of the world, right? You will have the eyes to see, like he says in Mark 18. This is what he's telling his disciples. You don't have your eyes to see? Don't you have ears to hear? This, if you can see this, then you can lead people, right? If you can be in the system and not of the system, then you can serve as a protective agent, which is known as salt, or a positive influence, which is known as light within the world. This is what Jesus meant in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5:13, when he says, be salt and be light into the world. Now that is a pretty cool and positive statement. How did we get there? Well, we got there by carefully observing the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod, the thing that gives rise to church and state. We're being conscious. We're raising our awareness about duality. And we're learning how to shift our thinking from either or into possibility. You see how that changes everything? Everything changes. The whole world, incrementally, bit by bit, just by you and I doing our small little bit in the world, changing how we think, not changing at all what we think. Now, may the strategy of our lives be to live freely and to truly know ourselves, rather than accept the surrogate identity of church and state. This, my friends, is how we move from a binary system of scarcity to an expanding kingdom of abundance. Thanks so much for joining the KevCast, where we learn to see beyond everything. I hope this content has helped you, and I'd love to hear from you if you have any questions or comments or feedback. Until next time, I hope you have an awesome day, and I can't wait to have you come back real soon.